Hi, good afternoon. Is there anyone else on the call at this point?
I am Kristen Swanson from UW-Milwaukee College
Kristen.
Of Nursing.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for joining us. We'll just wait a little bit here until folks join the call as well, all right?
Sure, yep.
Great, thank you. Welcome to the call. Who do we have joining us?
Hello there. This is Beverly Spies with the UW-Madison PA program.
Great. Welcome, Beverly. This is Rochelle from WICMU. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rochelle.
Who else do we have just joined the call?
Hi, it's Jean Fisher from Marquette.
Hi, Jean. This is Rochelle from WICMU. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
We'll get started shortly. Hello. Who just joined the call?
Hi, this is Melissa Pico from the Concordia School of Pharmacy.
Great, Melissa. This is Rochelle from WICMU. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Just for those, I think, three or four of you who are on the call now, can you all hear me okay, or is there an echo in the space that I'm coming from today?
I can hear you. I can hear you well.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I can hear you.
Alrighty.
Just fine.
Excellent. Thank you. I am in the Capitol right now with a hearing going on behind me, so hopefully we will all stay connected. But we're talking about workforce issues, which everyone is very invested in. Who just joined the call today?
This is Nadine Miller from the Concordia PA program, and I've dialed in with
Billy from the NP program.
Oh, great. Great. And is that Judy Hansen with you as well?
Judy is not able to make it today.
Okay, no problem. Sounds good. Thanks for joining us. This is Rochelle from WICMU, and we'll just wait for a few others to jump on the line.
Okay.
All right, who do we have just joined us?
Kenny McMillan with UW-Madison.
All right, Kenny, welcome. And who else do we have?
Pat Campbell from UWL.
Great. Pat Campbell, thanks for joining us. Who else are we missing?
Christy Ligler, UW-Madison.
Oh, could I have that first speaker repeat your name, please?
This is Christy Ligler.
Great. Christine?
Christy. Yes. No N.
Ah, yes. Very good.
Thank you.
And then someone else join us as well?
Kara Strike from Wampa.
Oh, hi, Kara. Welcome. This is Rochelle Andrews from WICMU. We'll just wait another minute and see who else jumps on the call today. All right. Who just joined us?
Colleen Gullickson. I'm from Edgewood College.
Great, Colleen. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Colleen, which program are you from?
Edgewood has a new graduate program, a family nurse practitioner program. So I'm here more to just listen today.
Super. Good. I just didn't have you on my list, so I'm making sure that I do.
Oh, okay. Tina DeGroot from UW School of Nursing.
Yes, I got you now. Very good. Thanks, Colleen.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Super. Okay, anyone else that I missed thus far who's joined us? All right, well, we'll get started, and I'm sure I'll have more folks beeping in shortly. So, again, I am Rochelle Andre. I work with the Wisconsin Council on Medical Education and Workforce. Thank you all so much for joining us on the call today. We are here to talk about clinical site coordination from the kind of school side of the equation. So on the call, we've got a wonderful group of education coordinators from across the state and from across PA, NP, pharmacy, and medical school programs. And we've got about a dozen people on the line today. So we're really excited to kind of bring this topic to a broader group. And what I'll do is go ahead and kind of let you know where this topic is coming from with WICMU. Then we will do a little bit of sort of setting the stage on different training requirements in a broad sense. And then hopefully this will be a time for each of you to share some feedback both for WICMU and for each other on what the challenges and successes are related to clinical site coordination. So that is the plan for today. If you have any questions throughout the call, please feel free to interrupt me. You can always send me an email afterwards, too, if you need any clarity. Who else just joined the call today?
This is Joyce in Madison.
Super, Joyce. Let me see which program from the medical school. Great.
From the medical school in Madison, yes. I work primarily with fourth-year family medicine electives.
Great. Thank you, Joyce. So I will just do a little bit of a roll call here so we know who all is on the line. And just let me know if you're here. That way we can make sure that I didn't miss you. So we have from PA programs, Beverly Spies from UW-Madison.
Here.
Pat Campbell from UW-La Crosse.
Here.
Jean Fisher from Marquette.
Yes.
Nadine Miller from Concordia.
Here.
Nicole Schwenzel from Alverno. I believe we do not have you. Tara Street from Wisconsin Academy of Physician Assistants.
Here.
Welcome, Tara. Okay, and then from, did I miss anyone from PA program? Great. From NP programs, I believe we've got Kristen Swanson from UW-Milwaukee.
Yes.
And then Billy Matt from Concordia.
Here.
Super. Anyone from NP programs I missed? Yes, Colleen from Edgewood joining us as well, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And then from pharmacy programs, I have Melissa Thiesfeld.
Correct.
From Concordia?
Great. Yep.
Thank you. Anyone else from pharmacy programs? And then from medical schools, I believe we have Kenny McMillian from UW. Correct? I know I've got Kenny on the line. He's probably muted. Joyce Jurdeau, also from UW, with fourth-year students?
Yes.
And then Christine Legler, also from UW?
Yes.
Great. Okay, anyone else that I missed? All right. So this conversation today is coming through the Wisconsin Council on Medical Education and Workforce, as I mentioned. So we are a collaborative of different healthcare workforce stakeholders across the state of Wisconsin. So we are a nonprofit, and I'll just give you a bit of context for who we are so that you can see how we're coming at this issue together. So we've been around for about 10 years as a nonprofit and work with a council of stakeholders. So that's everyone from medical schools to association groups such as the Hospital Association, Rural Wisconsin Health Co-op, and the Wisconsin Medical Society. So the group was first formed to address specifically physician workforce shortages in Wisconsin and help develop some of the state laws and funding for graduate medical education residency programs throughout the state. So that had been sort of our WICMU's first big endeavor starting out. But in recent years, we've really expanded to bring more folks into the WICMU circle to look at a lot of different clinicians with a long-run pipeline to training. So today that includes not only physicians, but also PAs, NPs, and pharmacists. And then we do have folks on our council who are really involved with nursing broadly as well. So our council meets quarterly, and we bring up different issues. And it was really in the last year, though many of you would probably attest to this being a long-term concern, that challenges regarding site coordination have come up over and over and again from the members on our council, including Tara Street, who's joining us on the call today, as well as Lisa Dodson from the Medical College of Wisconsin and Sarah Sorum from the Pharmacy Society. These issues were raised to the broader group so that we could see if maybe WICMI would be a place to do some convening and facilitating around this very broad issue of clinical site coordination and quality experience for students. It also came up again in the last few months, specifically in some interviews that WICMI conducted with hospitals. So we just finished up a pretty comprehensive physician workforce projection report. And one of the issues that came up from the hospitals and systems we interviewed in that report was a lot of challenges with site coordination and different experiences on that topic across the state. So we really thought it would be an appropriate time to bring this group together. And who we have on the call today are our education coordinators from these different schools who have a stake in ensuring there are quality education training experiences for students in Wisconsin in those fields we've identified to start with. So the goal of this call today is really to move some of the progress that a small WICMU work group has been making in the last few months and kind of move that forward. So you're each on the call today, which we're really excited about, to provide some input today. But there will be opportunities to continue with the work group if you so choose and even inform some of its priorities moving forward. The work group has a lot of different goals in mind at this point, but is trying to assess feasibility or appropriateness of more statewide coordination, like using some actual technical tools to do so. Other goals of the work group are including increasing the understanding of the needs between schools and sites to kind of match those up more effectively, as well as developing recommendations for developing clinical sites and what they should consider, such as housing, transportation, et cetera, that would make these sites as valuable as possible for students. So that's just a broad framework that WICMU is coming from. I certainly do not profess to be an expert and know everything there is about clinical sites, but we hope that you folks on the phone today are those folks who have had real experiences working with hospitals and health systems to get a better sense of what those experiences look like. And then down the road, after our call today, we will be working with the site side of hospitals and health systems to understand more of this issue from their perspective and kind of try to do a walk around of the whole issue at play here. So that's the broad context which WICMU is working from. Thank you all in advance for sharing with us. Who else has joined the call since I started blabbering here that we need to know is on the line?
Hi, Michelle. This is Lisa Dodson in Central Wisconsin campus.
Great. MCW. Lisa Dodson from MCW. Thanks for joining us. Who else do we have?
Nicole Schwenzo.
Great. Nicole, let me find you here from the PA program at Alverno, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. And then did we have one more person join us as well? Okie dokie. Super. Thank you both for just kind of looking through a little bit of the context here. Were there any questions for me from those on the call regarding what WICMI was up to or where this work will be going in the future? Okay. If something comes up, please let me know. And, of course, this isn't the only opportunity to share feedback. So if you're speaking with colleagues and someone from another school or a different program at your own school has some feedback to share, please do send them my way so we can make sure to capture their input as well. As I mentioned, this is part of the process that will inform future discussions with hospitals and systems to really learn about it from their side. So we're trying to get all the perspectives we can on this issue. And certainly it's been done too before by the Rural Wisconsin Health Co-op and others, but we think this issue deserves a fresh look and really bringing folks together from across different areas. I also failed to mention that Part of this issue arose as well due to recent new state funding opportunity for advanced practice clinician training grants in 2018. So there are new state dollars on the table to set up clinical rotations throughout Wisconsin, and this is an initiative that WICNU has been involved with, and we just saw that as an opportunity to really learn what some of the challenges are to clinical coordination today and integrate that into some of the grants that have been developed by DHS. So there are some real opportunities to inform policy and program development through your input today and moving forward. Okay, so without too much further ado, I'll put a few of the folks on the call in the driver's seat here. One of the first things that we want to take the opportunity to do with so many different people on the call today is gain a little bit clearer understanding of what the requirements are for students in different sorts of training programs. So I've asked a few folks, Tara Street, Melissa Thiesfeld, and Lisa Dodson, to share in a nutshell what clinical training looks like for students in those respective programs from PA schools, pharmacy, and medical students at MCW, because one of the issues we came to understand was that even within the same school, there is sometimes not a full understanding of what the different training requirements are for students, how long rotations are, who plans them, whether that's students themselves or an education coordinator like yourself. So all those different facets are very complex. So this is an opportunity for us to at least learn a little bit more about the basics, and then, of course, understand that every program has its nuances, and those are complex too. So, Tara, I'll ask you to give us a brief introduction of what that looks like for PAs, and for those on the call, I had sent out an attachment with the title of APC Clinical Training. So that's a PowerPoint that hopefully Tara will just walk us through a little bit and give us that 30,000-foot lens or view, and we'll do that for pharmacy and medical students as well. Tara, turning it over to you. And if you have any other comments to share about this group, please do so as well.
Thanks so much, Rochelle. And I think I just wanted to take the time to mention that this is really exciting. I think this is probably the first time that a call like this has happened across the state of Wisconsin. I think that really has a lot to do with WICNU and Michelle's buy-in to trying to tackle this issue and make sure that we have these opportunities for our students across the state. So thank you to WICNU. Thank you, Rochelle. I think this is awesome.
Thanks,
I think
Sarah.
What you said, too, about the APC grants, you know, this is really a group that's making things happen within the state, so I think that's also exciting. They bring to the table all the people, you know, the legislators, the hospital associations, the medical societies. They bring all these people together, and there's a lot of opportunity to make things happen, so I think that's also very exciting. So this PowerPoint that I put together with Tina DeRoot at Madison's nursing program was really kind of something we did to inform the folks at WICNU about what's happening with APC training in the state. So you can see that, and for this particular presentation, we were focused on the APRNs and PAs. And if I just kind of run through the PA portion of it, currently we have 5 PA programs in the state, soon to be 6. We're graduating somewhere.
I'm sorry, Tara, let me interrupt you real quick. For anyone else who might be on the call, if you wouldn't mind muting yourself, maybe I'm the only one, but I'm just getting a bit of background noise. And then, Tara, if you wouldn't mind getting as close as you can to your speaking device, that would be super. Thank you.
Excuse me. I didn't get a copy of the PowerPoint, so I don't have anything to follow along.
Oh, yeah. So we're just doing this audially. Who just asked for the PowerPoint that I missed?
Oh, Colleen Gullickson.
Oh, Colleen. So I will be happy to forward any materials to those that need it. And Colleen, I've got you on my list now.
I appreciate it. Pardon me for interrupting.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. For anyone else on the call, I should have mentioned this at the beginning also. I will send out notes and follow-up materials from the call. Of course, I can't capture it all, but this call is also being recorded, so I hope to share that with anyone who wasn't able to join us as well.
Oh, thank you
and
so
then
much.
Was there, yes. And was there someone else who just joined the call who I haven't heard from yet? Okay, super. Turning it back over to Tara. Sorry to interrupt you.
Okay, can you hear me better?
Yes, that is delightful.
Okay, and I'll just try to make sure that I mention everything that we have in here. But so 5 PA programs currently, about to be 6. We're graduating about 154 students every year. That's going to grow somewhere towards 185 per year in the next couple of years, which is very exciting. On average, it's somewhere between 24 to 26 months of the clinical year, or sorry, of the total education, and then a clinical year being their entire second or third year. We have one program that's 3 years, and then the rest of our programs are all two-year programs. So they spend an entire year in didactic education, a really condensed version of all the information that they need to know, and then that full next year on clinical rotations. So for our students, that looks like 12 to 15 months working time with preceptors in various areas, and there are many areas that are required for accreditation by the program. And each site, there's actually a requirement for that the program must ensure that site has, again, for accreditation, so that the students are getting all the education that they need. So just some really simple math, if we look at the current students that we're graduating, working somewhere between 40 and 60 hours a week for the hours that they need for that didactic year education, that's somewhere around 325,000 to 485,000 hours of training just for the PA students in the state. So I think a lot of people are surprised by the number of hours that they spend in that clinical year. The focus for most of them is somewhere in the family med, internal med, emergency med, general surgery, women's health, peds, and psych. Those are required content that they have to hit. And, of course, I'm sure like everybody, they face those obstacles finding what you might quote-unquote say your specialty. The women's health, peds, and psych groups, they're often the hardest to find. Most of the programs work on a 4 to 8 week rotation schedule, so the students come back to campus in between that for testing or touch back with their teachers, and then are otherwise out on site in between that. And if you have the PowerPoint, you can see that trying to put that schedule together across even just the 5 programs turns into a big colorful blob. Every school is on just a little bit slightly different schedule. So some might start a week off or here or there, or they start in the middle of the week versus starting on the first of the week. So that can be difficult when we're trying to mesh multiple programs across the same site. They do have to find these sites through the program, through the clinical year coordinator, which is a little bit different from our APRN group. And that, again, is part of their accreditation program. Some of the barriers that we've discussed in the past is simply the number of learners in the state of Wisconsin, that feeling of lack of support for the preceptor themselves in terms of being pushed for productivity and hours and just the resources that they need to precept, making connections with interested teachers and working through the system to find those who are interested, again, the overlapping schedules and those specialty rotations. Can be kind of difficult. We're also starting to see some issues in terms of preceptors expecting some type of reimbursement for their time, either with like a monetary reimbursement, time, or just schedule blocking from their employers, or some of the other options that people have been creative and been able to come up with. And some of that we're facing because we're competing with sites from schools in the Illinois, Minnesota areas. And certainly some groups are getting creative in ways to do that, but that's become a barrier. The APC training grant was a great opportunity to expand into some rural and underserved areas. So hopefully you were all aware of that. Those funds are just going out for this year, but we'll be rolling back out for next year again. And things that we had talked with QuickMU about was some of the opportunities that these grants sparked, but also that we've been talking with before, and I think that's what's exciting about this group. So you'll see those on the PowerPoint, but for those who don't have those, looking at opportunities to encourage employers to focus on kind of team-based training, so maybe they're taking on an APRN and a PA or a pharmacy student, thinking about that as an interdisciplinary team so that their whole clinical group can work on training that group of of trainees versus one person feeling that whole burden, looking at different ways that the state and the employers can help to incentivize preceptors either with time or recruitment opportunities, fellowship opportunities, possibly honorarium. I know people have floated the tax issues before, making sure that we're able to increase access to the rural sites with housing and transportation often being an issue for students, and then looking for ways to provide more preceptor training and to somehow centralize the system. And then I think the rest of the PowerPoint just kind of runs through the APC grants, which were kind of exciting, $500,000 that was budgeted specifically for the training of APCs in rural sites. And those are actually out the window and already awarded, so that's very exciting. Anything else you wanted me to touch base on, Rochelle?
No, that's great. I would open it up to the group if there are any questions from those on the call about the general training requirements for PA students, since we do have five PA programs on the call as well. So let's start there if there are any questions. Okay. And then was there anyone who joined the call late who needs to let us know they're there? Great. I hear a beep, and I assume we've got new people, and perhaps that may not be so. So, Tara, thank you for doing that. I'll point out that in the PowerPoint that many of you have before you, these are just a brainstorm of some of the ideas that Tara Street and Tina DeGroot from the UW School of Nursing had brought to WICNU earlier this spring. And that's really the type of feedback we're looking for to start just accumulating the ideas and options to really make these systems and the experiential learning as positive as possible for students, schools, and sites. So by no means is this a comprehensive list, but that's what we're in the middle of developing just today. So thank you, Tara. I don't want to pretend to be an expert on NPs and the workgroup participant who had helped us from that. As I mentioned, Tina DeGroot is not able to join us today, so we can leave that for another time. Unless, just putting you right on the spot, Kristen would Swanson from UW, would you care to provide just a 30,000-foot view on what that looks like for students or perhaps another time?
Well, my background is we have a family nurse practitioner program, which has been around for a number of years. And so that has been my experience with placing those students within the past 8 years. One of the biggest changes I have found in southeastern Wisconsin or in the metro area is the loss of our very skilled, very good teachers related to working in primary care. People are leaving primary care to be hospitalists, and so I have lost sight that way. So it's an interesting conundrum in that realm. So
gotcha. Maybe I'll interrupt you.
Sure.
If you could, we'll come back to that in a little bit.
Sure.
In terms of some of the program challenges, in terms of rather what the requirements for student learning are, would you be able to let us know, you know, whether that happens mostly in the, you know, second year, how many hours it is, any
sure,
of those
sure.
sort of details?
Sure, sure. Yes, we do. They have, if you go through our program full-time, we have only a DNP FNP program. We do not have any master's FNPs unless they come back post-certificate. So if it's a DNP, they have 2 years, if they're doing it full-time, of all the theory that you need and prep courses. Then when they do clinical, we start spring, summer, fall, 180 hours each semester, so it comes out to 540 hours of clinical, and they're also having theory class every Wednesday from 5:30 to 8:30. So it's a pretty busy year in that respect. And then for us, we encourage them to sit for their certification exam as soon as they finish those clinical hours, and then their last semester is doing their DNP residency project so that they pass that, and then they'll graduate with a FNP, DNP degree from us.
Okay, that's very helpful. And for your program, is it education coordinators that identify and secure preceptors for students during their clinical rotations, or are they going off one by one to find those?
For the most part, it is I that is doing them because that has been a draw for some students that they do not want to do that. But they've had to start doing some of that because some of the hospital systems in southeastern Wisconsin are saying, if you are our employee and a student, we will place you for your clinical. So then I have to work with them, okay, where are you employed? What is your hire date to do that?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean, so even though the hospital system will say that, it doesn't mean that they have enough spots to place the student.
Sure. Thank you for making that clarification. I'd also just like to let folks on the call know that George Quinn with me, executive director, has joined us for the call as well, so he's here too.
Hi there.
Great. Thank you for sharing those details, Chris, and I think that we will still go back to some of the issues you raised, and we'll do that shortly.
Sure.
Let me pass this over to Melissa Thiesfeld from Concordia School of Pharmacy, who will provide us a little bit of that same context and background on the logistics of training for pharmacy students, and then we'll return to the successes and challenges part of this discussion after we have that 30,000-foot level for each of these different clinician groups and students. Melissa?
Thanks, Rochelle. One of the other handouts that I think you have attached in the appointment is a document from Concordia that's an outline of our experiential curriculum. So you're welcome to follow along with that, and I can speak to that. As many of you probably know, there are now three schools of pharmacy in the state of Wisconsin, UW-Madison, Concordia, and then the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy opened a year ago. Pharmacy school curriculum are typically 3 to 4 years long in Wisconsin. The UW-Madison and Concordia programs are 4 years, and MCW's is a 3-year program. Regardless of the length of the program, all pharmacy schools have this concept of introductory pharmacy practice rotations and then advanced pharmacy practice rotations. The introductory rotations happen somewhere in the first 1 to 2 to 3 years of the program, and then the advanced rotations are full-time rotations that happen during the final year of the program. Those introductory rotations for students early in the curriculum can be a variety of things. Sometimes they include simulation, sometimes they include time at hospitals and health systems or community pharmacies. Sometimes it's students doing service learning. It can be a variety of things. Our accrediting body kind of gives us free rein to design those experiences. You'll see on the diagram that I provided for Concordia, our introductory rotations happen in 2-week blocks of time in the middle of each semester for the first 4 semesters that students are with us. So each semester, students spend a week at a community pharmacy and a week at a hospital pharmacy, and that's intentional. There's not a lot of there's no deviation from that. We want them in those very traditional pharmacy practice environments to see what practice looks like and get a chance to integrate and apply what they're learning in the classroom in those environments. All of those introductory rotations at Concordia are arranged by the school and come out of my office. We frankly don't let students be involved in that process. We have a large database of sites that we work with throughout Wisconsin and throughout the country, actually. So students enter preferences for where they want to do those rotations, and then we match students based on their preferences and the site's availability. Perhaps a little different than what was described from the PA program, our rotations are not assigned to a specific person. Rather, rotations are assigned to a site in general, especially for those introductory rotations. We can send 6 introductory students to Aurora St. Luke's, and we can send 4 to Frederick, and we can send 2 to St. Joseph's Hospital. So it's not necessarily being assigned to a specific person as a preceptor. When we get to that last year of the curriculum, then those advanced pharmacy practice rotations happen in a variety of areas. 2 of them happen in a hospital or health system setting, so the hospital health system API is meant to be a central pharmacy kind of operations distribution rotation, whereas the acute care medicine is meant to be a more direct patient care rotation where students are up on the patient care floors working with the interdisciplinary health care team. There's a community pharmacy rotation that happens in a traditional community pharmacy environment outside of a health system. And then ambulatory care API rotations sometimes happen in our hospital and health system partners. Sometimes they're in independent clinics. Sometimes those are housed in outpatient pharmacies as well. The rest of a student's year then is filled with elective rotations. Those can happen, you know, they can be diabetes rotations or infectious disease, critical care, oncology. Many of those happen in hospital and health system environments. Sometimes we have students who are going in who want to try out specialty pharmacy or working with Walgreens district managers, and then those are happening in slightly different environments. Students are required to have 1,500 hours of those final year rotations to be a licensed pharmacist in the state of Wisconsin, and I would say all three of the pharmacy schools in Wisconsin provide more hours than that, but 1,500 right now is the minimum. The other thing I wanted to highlight, maybe just in contrast to what we heard for the PA program, we perhaps are lucky and maybe a little abnormal. We generally have more availability for pharmacy student rotations than we can fill. Sometimes that happens because, you know, students are interested in different things and they're just not interested in those types of electives. But there are rural hospitals that are a little bit harder to send students to. We also do not, Concordia does not provide any reimbursement to any of our rotation sites. Precepting is part of many health system pharmacists' job responsibilities and is an expectation of the job. So we have not provided reimbursement to any of our pharmacy preceptors. They do get other benefits in regards to access to continuing education credit, and there's some benefit to our when our faculty are practicing at their health systems as well. Are there any questions I can answer based on that?
Great. This is Rochelle again. Thank you so much for sharing that, Melissa. If there are additional questions later on, you are kind of our pharmacy voice for today, so hopefully we'll get to some of your challenges as well. May I ask Lisa Dodson from the Medical College in Wausau to share a little bit about kind of the basics of your student experiential learning experience there, please.
Hi, this is Lisa Dodson. I am the dean of the campus. It's a new campus. We just admitted our third class. The unique things about our campus that I'll talk about first really are different than what most people experience in medical school. So we have a three-year a campus. Our students go year-round. They don't have summers off, and they don't have a fourth year for a standard fourth year for electives and that kind of thing. That is unusual. Certainly the Milwaukee campus and the University of Wisconsin campus in Madison are not similar to that in the three-year model. The other thing that's different about our campus is we utilize a longitudinal integrated clerkship model, which is, again, unique to our campus, not even applying to the Green Bay campus, which is also a three-year campus that's in its fourth year of operation now in Green Bay. Also an MCW school. So the longitudinal integrated clerkship starts for us in the summer between the first and second year. Our students have a summer block of rotations in a community where they are experiencing simultaneously all of the seven required disciplines rather than in a block rotation model, which is more typical, which is where you start on a Monday, you're there for 4 weeks doing just pediatrics, you take a test on Friday, have the weekend off, and on Monday you start being a psychiatrist, do that for a month, repeat and repeat through the various disciplines. Our students are really doing all of those things simultaneously with some flexibility in how they achieve their competencies around each of those disciplines that can take a longer period of time to accomplish. So we have our students there for 11 of 12 weeks during the first summer. They have a week off for vacation, and then they return to class for their second year. Then they're out again in the spring, beginning in the spring, as soon as they've taken boards, for essentially another 8 months up through March. Then in March and May, they have 2-month-long blocks of immersion medicine in usually hospital medicine of some sort. And then they graduate. We expect about 60% to 70% of our students to complete in 3 years. Those who do take a fourth year for a variety of reasons have a much more traditional fourth year with a lot of elective time and that kind of thing. So that's the difference. In a standard medical school curriculum, what you would find more likely in Milwaukee or in University of Wisconsin is students having the summer off between the first and second year and often doing research, although some will look for clinical opportunities. Then they're back for a second year, and they don't begin their clinical clerkships until they've completed boards, usually in May of their second year. Then they complete a full nine to 10 months of immersion in different specialties in a block model. Then they are off to fourth year electives throughout their fourth year. Our students here, similar to many students, are now also getting early clinical experience. So our students are right now, our students that just started, are in what we call our doctoring course, which is Foundations of Clinical Medicine, which is really administered here as a boot camp in the summer. And then they will start with clinical half day, mostly primary care and mostly outpatient, one half day a week in the fall, so in August and September. And all of those students are placed within an hour of our campus because they're there for such a short time. In the second year, when they're back from that first block of clinical training time, they are also doing the similar thing with specialty training, so they can choose up to 4 different specialties that they would like to gain some experience in. The University of Wisconsin's program of WARM, which is the Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine, does have some elements that are more similar to our curriculum in terms of a little bit more of a longitudinal type approach, although not exclusively, but it is a 4-year program rather than a 3-year program. And I will take questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Lisa. I'll also offer, were there any voices from UW's program that would like to chime in with additional differences in terms of some of those logistical elements that you'd like to outline? Great. And any other questions for Lisa? Okay. Well, then we're going to dive into the meat of the discussion today. Certainly, we could kind of talk through those details on logistics a lot. And even now, I'm trying to jot down some questions, such as Lisa mentioned, how far do the students travel? Are there, you know, caps on how far that can be? Who coordinates those elements? What are the timelines? So we can continue to flesh that out. But for now, let's really tap into the expertise of those who are on the call. And using the order I've outlined in the agenda, I will ask those who are on the call to share some of their thoughts, and this can be informal, you know, anecdotal. This is all just part of a brainstorming information gathering process that we'll be using to inform later discussions. So we're really looking for 3 elements. So the first is what is working well with the sites, and I want to leave that open for you. Please do name any best practice sites if you can. We really want to use that to inform those discussions later, and with your permission, I will reach out to those sites to learn more from them. And then finally, those challenges. So what is not working well? So those 3 broad questions, and we'll start with our PA program since we do have several participants available. And I would encourage anyone to, you know, butt in, let us know your name if you have a question. And we want to make this an organized discussion, but also have some conversation if we can. So, Beverly from the UWPA program, would you care to start us off? And I'll make the note that don't be afraid to repeat what someone else has said. Just let us know, yes, this is also a problem for us. That way we kind of know what is really rising to the top as a priority that comes up over and over again. So don't be afraid to share that as well. Okay. Beverly, I'll pass it over to you.
Sure. Thank you. So happy to give input. So things that work well, working well, I have to admit there has been a transition since I've been in this role to more of a central, like different institutions kind of have a medical education office. And so while there's always kind of growing pains why that gets up and running, that has certainly helped with, for example, onboarding or reaching out, you know, do you have any of these rotations available? So that works well, especially if kind of acceptance or denial is done so in a timely, you know, as timely as they can. I get it. They're coordinating a lot of different learners. And so I have found that that's worked well. You know, some organizations, like I say, more and more are doing it that way. Like Aspirus has been really good, Marshfield Clinic. You know, more and more of kind of the bigger institutions are working with that. Bellin, some of the, to name a few. So, and I've found that also organizations where really pro-precepting, pro-educating the next colleagues that comes from the top down to encourage education to our preceptors. I think all of us will probably say and hear, you know, preceptors like, gosh, I just don't have time. You know, if I can get a little bit of time out of my schedule to help with that. So those institutions that are looking into ways to reward preceptors, and not necessarily monetarily, but sometimes I guess somebody could argue, well, a little block of time is monetary, but they're worried about their production, and so somehow to marry that. And that kind of goes with, you know, what not working well. I mean, what, those are one of the barriers that preceptors are feeling, I find. You know, here at the UW Health, for example, they used to have a block of time for, quote-unquote, administration and teaching, and that was taken away. And so I certainly feel the pain of that because I certainly have had preceptors say, you know, I can no longer precept because of this. So things to mm-hmm. think about. And then things that also make it work well, kind of seamless onboarding with EMR training, all of that really helps. Of course, energetic, eager preceptors, and I have also found just a small little pearl, those institutions that, like the first day, give a little bit of an orientation, almost in the student's mind, makes a world of difference. Like, wow, they know I'm coming, they have this all prepared, even if it's just a little, you know, orientation or tour, really seems to be a nice step-off point for a lot of the students.
Great. Thank you for sharing that, Beverly. Well, I think what we'll do is reserve questions until after we hear from all the PAs, and then we'll return to questions and maybe some discussion on these items. Okay. Thank you, Beverly.
Sure.
Pat Campbell, would you like to go ahead?
Yes. I would also echo.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pat. Remind us what program you're from.
Oh, sorry. UW La Crosse.
Great. Thank you. Please go ahead.
And I always preface my remarks with the fact that I'm kind of an anomaly with my PA colleagues here in the state because our program at its inception had set out to have distinct clinical partners. So I have a luxury that I don't like to, I'm not bragging about, but I always say that I don't feel quite the same pain, but I definitely want to be a part of helping out. Because most of my students do get placements, and it's through the courtesy of this clinical partnership. But what I can tell you that even when I'm searching outside of the clinical partnership or within it, the things that Bev mentioned as far as productivity issues, those certainly ring very true, that we need to be supporting the preceptor and getting the messaging up to the leadership that our preceptors need to have time built in their schedule to be not only a good clinician, but to be an effective teacher. I think that's being taken away little by little, and it certainly, I think we're seeing the pinch with that. The other thing that I can say from just experience across the board, that students will come back and report to me that what makes a good site or a bad site is that the organizational structure for the rotation in and of itself. So when the student is handed a schedule the first day, they know who they're with. They know who they're going to be following for the day, the week, whatever have you. And in the event that somebody is sick or called out, the student has a backup. They don't. I mean, I've had students complain to me where when they're having to go shop around for somebody else, or you know, scroll down the. General surgery suite looking for another preceptor or a surgery to hop in on, that does not bode well for student learning, and that would be across the board. Let's see. I think, you know, Bev's comments about the vast majority of facilities have instituted these centralized clinical ed departments have really helped to streamline, and I think it really gives a nice professional air to legitimizing how important it is to do the onboarding process. But again, we need to have leadership supporting that these are going to be future colleagues, and it's definitely a relationship between HR as well as clinical education. I think I'm going to turn it over to my other colleagues and let them talk about their strengths and their challenges as well.
Pat, before you do so, could I ask you to just give us a little bit more information, if you can, about those clinical partnerships and what that means in practice?
Okay. So when the program started back in the late 90s, it was a tri-partnership with Gundersen Health System and Mayo Health System. And what that partnership entails is that they will supply the majority of clinical sites, or however many clinical sites we are requesting. So in our case, we happen to have 19 students enrolled each year. Mayo picks up 12 of those students for all 11 of the rotations if they wish to do all 11 at Mayo. And then Gundersen will pick up the remaining 7 students for those 11 rotations. More recently, Marshfield has signed on to assist us and serve as a partner in that clinical relationship. So this first year of expansion, we have added 6 students, which Marshfield will be picking up, and ultimately that will evolve to 12 students that Marshfield will be providing clinical rotation experiences.
Okay. Thank you for those details.
Yep.
Turn it over to Jean Fisher from Marquette's PA program.
Hi, everybody. So I hate to start with the downside, but the barriers that I encounter a lot are connecting with preceptors because there's only, you know, cold calling. I think somebody else had that on the list, is really difficult. We've been trying to reach out to our alumni, but there's probably people out there in organizations that have had a teaching role and would be willing to do it again, but I just simply do not know who they are. So that's where some organizations really are doing it well. Aurora just started with a central person who is reaching out, and if you need something, he'll go and send out a group email to people in that specialty and try and connect you. And I think other places could be doing that better. The barrier of the, you know, needing institutional support to give them time to teach and along with their productivity. Also the competition between students in the Milwaukee area in particular. We've got medical students who take priority, especially in children's hospital clinics, because it's, you know, they're medical, associated with the medical college. So they feel like they already have enough students. They get students early on that might come in for 2 afternoons a week or something, and they don't feel like they could also have a PA student at the same time. That being said, as nice as it is for NPs to be able to get a position in the place that they're working, the organization that they're working, that also kicks out PA. Because if a preceptor is planning on precepting an NP, then because they're already associated with the organization and they're supporting that employee and hope to continue employing that employee in a different role, I totally get it. But then, again, they're not going to take a PA student also. So that's another barrier that I run into. That conflict of the overlap. And then the cost issue. It began with the Caribbean schools, the medical schools. They started paying for preceptor sites. And so now a lot of organizations are expecting that we will pay for administrative burden is what they phrase it as, administrative burden of onboarding the student. And if you're moving a student every, we have 3 and 6 week rotations, but every 6 weeks to pay a fee of a couple hundred to $500, it's just something that our budget isn't built for, and it will end up passing that cost on to the students. And as you know, they've already got an expensive education and are taking out loans. I just hate to see that to be an additional barrier to getting students into the healthcare field. And I really, that's really a big barrier. Things that are working well, I would second what has already been said as far as if a healthcare organization is supportive of students and make it their mission to support them, both financially, maybe with providing housing, also supporting the workers that they, you know, the preceptors to allow them to take time to educate the students. So I think that's all I've got.
Great. Thank you, Jean. You had all, I just want to share this as well. You had sent out a resource from another state. Mm-hmm. Did you want to share anything about that over the call that you thought was a possible?
Oh, sure. So Maryland, Colorado, and Georgia, there's a state income tax incentive for preceptors, and I'm not sure exactly how that works, what their requirements are, but if they precept for a set number of hours per year, they get a tax deduction. So it's on their personal income tax, not the corporate income tax. So that is fantastic, and I think would be an incentive for preceptors.
Thanks, Jean. That's, you know, just the sorts of ideas that we just want to continue accumulating and make an inventory of all these different levers that either organizations or other states are trying to make use of, and especially if we can find any evaluative information on them, this is a place to hopefully share that sort of information. Great. Thanks, Jean. Let me turn to Nadine Miller from Concordia's PA program.
Hi. I mean, I think I would like to second all the other coordinators, kind of, you know, larger institutions that have a central office makes it a lot easier as a central contact person. And that their timeliness in getting back can kind of make or break some things, but they're also dependent upon when preceptors get back to them. I think sometimes it's frustrating if you have a private institution and you have a preceptor, but you can't get it okayed through, say, the office manager. I've got maybe two sites that I have a willing preceptor, but I don't have a willing manager who's willing to support that. So that's somewhat frustrating. I think that's really that's the frustration, I think, to add, and I second the larger central support staff of helping us find in larger institutions has been helpful.
And I've heard a mention of you know, a few of those, including Aspiris, Marshfield, Gunderson, and Mayo. So if there are others that come up for the rest of folks on the call and you really want to call those out, please do so that we can have a record. Or especially since this theme is coming up a lot, if there are actually any smaller hospitals or independent clinics that do a good job of this, we definitely want to know about them so that we can learn more about what they're doing. So let us go ahead and move on to Nicole from El Verno College.
I didn't know Al Verno's got a PA program.
Yeah.
Nicole, are you with us?
Oh, sorry about that.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Ahead. Yep.
I just want to thank you for allowing me to participate here. I appreciate that, and I'm willing, you know, great to have this effort and look forward to it going forward. As a developing program, I don't have a lot to add. Although there's one piece that I do want to mention just because I'm at an accreditation seminar right now, a meeting, and for our accrediting body for PA programs. And something that was interesting that was mentioned here was talking about sharing sites amongst programs. I guess our accrediting body is hoping we'll all work together to work towards something like that in the future. But one barrier that they have brought up with that was that each independent program is going to have different objectives and evaluations and some efforts like that for student evaluation. So if we all work towards collaborating in the future, maybe we can streamline that to make it easier on the site.
Mm-hmm. And, Nicole, could you, for those on the call who may not be familiar, let us know what point in the program development Alverno is in right now when you anticipate starting students?
We anticipate January of 2020 as our first cohort of students.
Great. Are there any other questions that you think kind of in this program development phase, since you guys are starting from point A, that we need to be addressing on this call that we can all learn from other issues that are coming up that we could be helpful for?
Obviously, any assistance is great. I just got a lot of different perspectives here at this meeting that I'm at about, you know, paying for sites, and I've realized that some people around the country are paying $1,000 per rotation, and once you go down that rabbit hole, it's, you know, kind of hard to turn back. So no specific questions per se, but like I said, I'm looking forward to working with you all going forward.
Great.
Could I ask people to mute if they're not speaking because there's some background chitter chatter that makes it difficult to hear the main speaker?
Thanks for that comment. Yep, we hear that on our end too. Tara Street from WAPA, are there any other questions or issues you care to raise other than those that were in the PowerPoint earlier? I know we've had conversations about housing, transportation, or having students under a team instead of an individual. So any comments there would be more than welcome.
Yeah, I think that some of the feedback that we've received from the preceptors themselves, that it's nice when their employer will look at it as not just their student, but as their whole team student, so that they can feel free to take days off, that, you know, they can have kind of this group working with that student instead. I know they feel that that's a more supportive environment. The travel is something that we hear frequently from students. I went to Madison's program that, you know, Bev tries to work with everybody to get them near where they need to be or to find housing, but that expectation is on the student to do that if there isn't housing provided. So a lot of students, you know, list that as a barrier to going to some of these more rural sites, which might be a great site for learning. And I think that's something we talked through WICMU, and I know Tina shared that as a concern for the nursing students, particularly because they're trying to work oftentimes while going to school, that getting that travel time from home to site is difficult, and difficult for PA students with families as well. If they have to spend a great deal of time in the car getting there, that can be tough.
Sure. Great. Thank you for those comments, Tara. For all of the PA programs, we just heard from five and a developing one around the state. Are there any other questions or comments now that we've heard from each of you? Okay, great. Well, perhaps more will come up. Thank you all for your comments. I'm rapidly doing note-taking here. We will switch gears over to NPs, and Kristen Swanson from UW-Milwaukee's program, we'll come back to you, and perhaps you'd care to share your insights.
Sure, thank you. I've been doing placements for the Family Nurse Practitioner program for 8 years, and it's really been an interesting ride in that it is becoming more and more difficult to find primary care
placements for our family nurse practitioner program, because we only want the best clinic with the best preceptor. And the other limitation is it has to be within 60 to 90 minutes of the student's home address. And so, believe it or not, I can have difficulty finding those experiences or those clinicals during those three semesters, because I need family medicine, I need peds, you know, internal med, gero, and it's difficult to get that. I'm also finding that if I do find preceptors, it's very difficult to have a preceptor precept two semesters in a row. So it's, you know, you need new preceptors for 30 students every semester, and so that takes time to find those. The things that are going well, I would say are going well, are the onboarding is much better. The hospital systems are streamlining those processes, and that makes it so much easier for the students, reduces their stress significantly. The other piece is some of the hospital systems are attempting to place their own employees for their clinical in their own hospital system, which is very nice for those students. But then when the hospital system can't place their students, then that's an extreme dissatisfier for the student also.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Kristen. Billy, Matt, any additional comments from Concordia's program?
Sure. To kind of bounce off Kristen, so unlike her, all of our students, well, we're actually an online program, so all of our students actually have to find their own preceptors for three semesters for 200 hours. And we have the same pretty much requirements that Kristen has. You know, they have to have enough peds, they have to have, you know, enough women's health, enough adults.
I'm sorry, Billy, could you speak a little bit closer to your microphone, please?
Oh, sure. Sorry about that. You know, UW, we're actually a little different. We have a master. We graduate our FNP students and adult gero with master's degrees. But since we're an online program, I think most of the issues that we have are more out of state. When we have preceptors agree to take our students, it's the organization that comes in and says, well, at this time, we're not going to do an affiliation agreement, you know, or a contract. And that's where it's kind of disappointing to tell the students, well, at this time, they have to look elsewhere. So me trying to intervene and trying to get, you know, send them ideas and previous preceptors that have been passed with them. Like, what's going well is kind of like what Kristen from UW said is, you know, the larger hospital systems, like in the southeastern Wisconsin, you know, they're placing more of their own employees. So that's always nice. But it's unfortunate when there's not enough preceptors to take all the student requests that come in, and then they have to go out and find additional preceptors or hours on their own.
Great. Thank you, Billy. I will also mention just some comments from Tina DeGroot, who is from UW School of Nursing and the NP program. She adds that from her perspective, the sites that use an application process works the best. Those may include the VA, Gunderson, SSM, Marshfield, and MCW, Stock Prairie, and Aurora. And then she kindly adds that the organizations that have to cold call one at a time are a nightmare. It takes forever. Which I imagine is an experience that many of you share just in terms of the time it takes to facilitate that process. So are there any additional questions for our NP programs? Super, I'll keep it moving. We will turn over to Melissa Thiesfeld with pharmacy.
Thanks. I think much like what others have already said, I think having that centralized person at a health system is really helpful from my perspective. Pharmacy rotation availability seems to run directly through pharmacy departments. So while many of the organizations have medical education departments that help with onboarding, we go directly to the pharmacy department to figure out what rotations they can offer and when they can offer those to us. So in particular, if I'm going to call out good sites, I would say Friedrich Hospital has a really good system in place. They have a central administrative person who is my go-to person as a rotation coordinator. And so when I need a pharmacy-based rotation, I call her up, or when I want to know what rotations they can offer, I call her up or send her a spreadsheet, and she fills it out for me and tells me how many students they can take and which units or which elective rotations they can take at each particular time. So that's really helpful. She's also our liaison when, you know, we have to make rotation changes because inevitably pharmacists will leave or something happens and they can't do that rotation anymore. She's my go-to person to help me make those adjustments. So that's, I think, really helpful. On that same note, I would also say the health systems that are visible on our campus for other events also, I think that adds to that level of importance they place on student training. So we have lots of health systems that are involved in our orientation for students in graduation, banquets, and other awards events. When health systems are part of our career fair, that level of commitment to student training, I think, translates over to their to our ability to work with them in clinical placements. From a what's not working well perspective, I think I would just maybe echo what has already been said. I think when health systems have a lot of confusing paperwork that has to happen before a student actually comes on site, that's a challenge for us to convey to students. We have people within the pharmacy school whose sole job it is to manage that pre-rotation paperwork and make sure students have watched all the right videos and filled out all the right forms and submitted everything where it needs to get submitted. And I know there's been efforts put in place with the Fox Valley Healthcare Alliance to try to streamline that, but in addition to doing all the Fox Valley paperwork, then we have to do additional separate paperwork for each site. So I think that is very challenging for us to manage. And I think the last thing, I think I mentioned earlier, we actually do get great response from rural sites who want to be involved and want to have pharmacy students participate in practice with them and conversations with them, but it's hard to get students interested in those sites. We actually have quite a few sites that offer free or low-cost housing to pharmacy students, but it's hard to convince a pharmacy student that, hey, you should go do a rotation in Amory, Wisconsin. They have free housing, but you have to go to Amory and stay for 6 weeks. So that's a challenge, too.
Thank you for sharing that item about paperwork. It's one that I would be curious to hear about more, and certainly was part of our original discussion that there was a lot of repetitive and time-consuming documentation. So we'll keep that on the radar also. Thank you.
I think, sorry, one other thing I just thought of as you said that. I think Ascension is getting there, at least from a pharmacy perspective, like as all these health systems merge under the Ascension umbrella, it's a slow process to get them all on the same page and using the same system. But I've seen it at least be moving in the right direction over the last 12 to 18 months. So I'm hopeful that we'll get there with the paperwork process for all those Ascension sites soon.
Great. Okay. Any questions for Melissa? I think she's our only pharmacy person today, but I'm also seeking input from other pharmacy schools. And Sarah Sorum from the Pharmacy Society regrets that she can't join us, but she's working on this issue too. Okay, with that, I will turn it over to medical. So we'll start with Kenny McMillian, if you're still with us, from UW. Kenny, are you there? Okay, we will jump down to Joyce Jardot from UW. Or Christy Legler.
I'm still here.
Great. Christy, would you like to share your input?
Can you just tell me what you would like me to focus on?
Oh, sure. So tell us which year of students do you work with?
Okay. So I'll try to make this as possible. So University of Wisconsin does not do a typical year 1, 2, 3, 4 anymore for medical school. We now have three phases. So the first phase is about 18 months. So it's the first year of medical school and that plus one semester. Phase two is the phase that I work in, and that is one semester of second year and one semester of third year. And then the final phase is another 18-month block, and that is the last part of their third year and all of their fourth year. So what we've moved to are more integrated blocks. So I work with second and third years in phase two. There are four 12-week blocks. I work in the block titled Chronic and Preventative Care that we refer to as CPC. And in the CPC block, it's the only required in this phase, outpatient experience. So we have family medicine, outpatient internal medicine, outpatient psychiatry, and outpatient neuro. And so the students go through this sort of longitudinal block with all four of those specialties occurring sort of at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So does that
make would you talk a little bit more about so do the students find their own sites for those blocks? Do you recruit the preceptors for them? How do you really get that to work and what's working well and not?
So we find all of our own sites. If a student has someone that they've worked with in the past that they would really like to work with, we're happy to honor that. We just do the same paperwork that you folks are all familiar with, the affiliation agreements, and we need them to have a faculty appointment. So there's some things that happen on this end. But we are responsible for finding all those places. And I guess I can't say one thing has been particularly helpful. It really, we've done all kinds of different things to recruit, and I think it feels at least like it's sort of hit and miss. We find people that feel strongly about passing on what they learned and helping the next generation in the profession, but I have been doing this for a while now, and I don't have any pearls of wisdom of anything that's been particularly helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Chrissy. So you haven't found the golden bullet for us quite yet.
I have not. But I'm hoping to learn from you all.
Good. Thank you.
Can you folks hear me now?
Sorry, who was that?
This is Kenny MacMillan. I was trying to speak earlier, but it wouldn't unmute for some reason.
Well, great. Please share your thoughts, Kenny.
All right. Yeah, thanks for having me here today. There definitely is an opportunity to echo a lot of what's been said today. The central coordinators at sites have made a great deal of difference. Our Aurora Lakeland site, we refer to them, the Lake Geneva and Burlington area, they've got an excellent coordinator. Our Eau Claire Mayo system has been really fantastic to work with. They just changed coordinators, unfortunately. But they've been another excellent site for us. I'm really glad earlier that it was Melissa that brought up the documentation issues. I think that was something I wanted to also bring up. And with, you know, having these affiliation agreements set up with all of the different clinical sites, it does feel odd to have the students resubmit all the documentation to them. I think it's a HIPAA and a FERPA liability that none of the organizations or schools would rather be exposed to. So I think that there's work to be done there for privacy's sake, especially in the world we live in with constant attacks on different servers and information databases. So I think that we could have some work done to make that process easier for students and staff. I think there's a number of different benefits to streamlining that process. Let's see. One thing that I can't imagine is unique to the UW here in Madison is a lack of a oversight of a 3,000-level view of where all of the placements are going between all the different schools of pharmacy, PA, MD. All of us are really focused on our own programs, but there's not a lot of awareness between the programs of who's placing students at which sites or placing them, overloading a specific clinic system. Are we not overloading that clinic system? And I think we're missing some opportunities there for finding additional placements for students. Another barrier, obviously, as other people have said, is housing at rural sites. I think that sites, if they were to look at providing housing for students in a recruitment light, they would see that they'd be saving a lot of money by offering students for housing, potentially renting an apartment or owning a house somewhere in the area that is specifically used for housing students as they come through on rotations. I think they would find that they would absolutely come out on the positive side for recruitment. If you look at physician costing $250,000, you're losing in the process of recruiting a physician, buying a house or renting a house. Even if you just get one physician out of that process in 5 years, you're still going to be coming out ahead. And so let's see if there's other items. So I think that mainly runs down the list of what I was going to kind of push through here. So I think that's all I've got.
Thank you, Kenny.
Yep.
Was there anyone else from UW who wanted to chime in here? Great. Lisa Dodson, did you have any additional comments in terms of your experience with MCW that you'd like to share or issues that we haven't raised yet?
Thank you. This is Lisa. Some of this relates back to I've been here in Wisconsin for 4 years. I came from Oregon Health Sciences University and was the director of the Area Health Education Center's program there for a long time. So some of this harkens back to this. This is a problem every state has faced. There was a couple of things that happened before I left and I haven't kept tabs of, but I think that were very helpful. We actually were successful at getting the legislature to set a group of standards for all of the paperwork and the documentation things, which was incredibly helpful, which meant that it was actually state law that these elements were required and that they couldn't just arbitrarily say, we need this, 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 and this, you know. And so it actually really successfully kind of standardized across the state all of the student requirements. There were still occasional problems, but it was very much more cohesive and really effective. That was kind of a wonderful thing right there. I always feel like we're still trying to balance all of this on the backs of the individual preceptors, and a lot of the discussion has revolved around that. What I think we really need to work on in this group, this may be a something that WICMU can pull us all together with, is we need sort of the equivalent of an all-payer system. You know, the people who are not at the table here having this discussion are the people who benefit from the products of our work. So all of our students go out and work for health systems, and they work for, you know, insurance companies make money off of, you know, the work that our students will ultimately do as practitioners in the state. And I think we really need to look to a wider source of funding and support for some of these activities, because we know that Wisconsin is at a bit of a recruiting disadvantage compared to some other states. We know there's an outflow of physicians and heavy retirements coming. And if we really expect to solve this problem, we need to start viewing our students as a resource statewide, not as this burden that we need to pawn off onto individual preceptors to take responsibility for. So I would be very much in favor of involving some other people, including the state, including insurers, including health systems, in this discussion about to solve this problem, because they really do benefit from what our work. We have some administrative and regulatory barriers that get in the way. You know, it's been referenced several times, so I won't get into deep depths here about, you know, different requirements by the boards and all of those kind of things that can get in the way. And I think those may be a little harder to address, but it needs to be on the table. I think some of the other groups that have not been included here are residencies, because they certainly do also use capacity and are, you know, at a different stage of learning, but can be a resource, but also can be, you know, something that health systems are committing to. The housing issue has come up. I think that's a huge issue for the rural areas, and I completely agree with the previous speaker about that. The different lengths of time that our trainees are in different locations. Some are there for, you know, an entire block of time. Some are there for a month. Some are there for a few weeks. So that complicates things. One of the things that we may want to look into, again, in Oregon, the Oregon Consortium of Nursing Education, or OCNE, developed a centralized scheduling system for all of the nursing programs in the state. And what they found when they did that, which was not an easy task, but they found they actually had 40% more capacity than they thought they had, because, you know, there's always that kind of tendency to hold your preceptors really close and not share them if you don't. And when we went to a centralized scheduling system for all the nursing, it was like, oh, there's untapped resources there. In fact, there were preceptors who were unhappy because they weren't getting students as often as they wanted, because people were holding them back, so they didn't want to sort of share that valuable resource. So we may want to try to look at some kind of a regionalized or even statewide scheduling process. AHEC can be very helpful in that. There's maybe other organizations besides WICMU who may be interested. So I think there's a lot of things that we can do, and we're probably collectively better off trying to manage some of this than individually with many, many different programs trying to, you know, carve out little pieces of the pie. And I think if we're interested in legislative action, we need to come together as groups to really approach the legislature with some solutions that might be helpful.
This is Pat from UWL. To kind of piggyback on that comment, for those of us that have placed students across the border in Minnesota, they do utilize, or at least in the Twin Cities area, they do utilize a system such as this, the TCCP.
Yeah, it can be done. It's challenging, but I agree. It really, you know, many people have mentioned how helpful it is that if a health system has a single entry point, you can imagine if we had even bigger, you know, ways to group that all up, it might solve a bunch of our problems.
Thank you for those comments, Lisa and Pat as well. In the follow-up notes, I will, through research for this call, come across a few different states who have tried to implement different systems like this, including one from the Michigan Health Council that you may be familiar with. So I'll send over some resources on that and the one in Minnesota as well, just as part of our resource exploration. Were there any additional questions for Lisa or any of the other UW speakers? Okay. Well, in an effort to be respectful of everyone's time, I want to thank you for your participation. I think this is just the beginning of a conversation. What I'll do is try to synthesize the discussion today, follow up with all of you with that. Let me know if you have additional thoughts or comments to share in the next few weeks. I will be following back with hospitals and systems to kind of understand this issue from their side as well. If you have colleagues who you know or would like to share information and were not involved in the call today, please send them in my direction. As well as any other resources or policies that you've come across that you'd at least like to be on the radar, such as, you know, tax incentive programs or others, as Jean had mentioned. And then I would just like to invite you to consider continuing to be a part of this conversation. So you can see on the bottom of the agenda there, we've got kind of two ways, at least through WICMU to start with, for you to stay involved. So number one is if you really want to, you know, be on perhaps monthly calls, continue to push this issue forward, look at different policy and or programming options, let me know. I'll be really fleshing out our core work group with additional participants from this call and those who are not able to make it. So let me know if you're interested in being involved on that area. Otherwise, if you just want to stay apprised of our activities, that is great, and I will keep you on our list for updates as well. Thank you all for your participation. Let me see if
I had any additional questions from maybe Tara Street or Lisa Dodson, our original work group members. Any other questions for the group or comments?
I don't think so. Just thanks, great, everybody, for participating.
Yeah, I agree. This has been really helpful, and pulling people together, I think, is the way we're going to address these issues. So,
thanks, Tara. Thank you, Lisa, as well. And as I said, this is hopefully just the start. And thank all of your comments and your time this afternoon. Stay tuned for me for a follow-up email, and we will be in touch shortly. Thank you all, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye now.